Welcome to Bridging the Gap. I'm David McDonald. On today's show, we're going to be speaking with members of NET Ministries, that's National Evangelization Team. And they're a group based out of Ottawa that sends young people across the country and really throughout the whole world to evangelize and carry the message of a personal relationship with Christ to Catholics everywhere. We'll be speaking with several young people, Hannah Barrett, Andy Horner, and also some youth ministers from the Archdiocese of Pembroke. We're going to talk about the tough issues, about what do we do with the conversations around sex, violence, drugs, drinking, all that stuff. How do we pull our youth out of this world into a personal relationship with Christ and into our families again? Please join us for the next 30 minutes on Bridging the Gap. We're in Quebec City right now at a fantastic event that has about 650 youth who are just on fire for the Lord. And I have with me here Hannah Barrett, who's with NET Ministries. That's a national evangelization team. Hannah, you've just come back from Ireland. How was that?
That was the most amazing experience I could possibly imagine. It was very hard, very difficult, but definitely saw Christ shine through everything that we did. So it was beautiful.
You grew up in a good Catholic family, homeschooled, all that good stuff. What was it like when you went into high school in grade 10?
Well, I have to say I'm so incredibly grateful to my parents that they gave me the foundation that they did. I am so blessed to be able to have Christ as a rooted part of my childhood. Because when I did make that so-called transition into the real world, when I did turn back to Christ, it gave me something to look back on and to remember, and it was just that much easier. So I'm so grateful to my parents that they made Christ a very interactive part of our lives as kids, like going to Mass as a family every Sunday, praying the rosary every night. It was just fundamental things that we would do together. Like, our faith was so alive in our family, which was really incredible.
What was it like going in as a person who was homeschooled and making that decision to socialize with, the sort of normal crowd or whatever they'd call it, kids your age, in a school after having been homeschooled? And tell us about some of the decisions that you made and some of the pressures that were put on you.
Right. Well, for myself, I was shy. So it was really difficult for me to kind of socialize, like you were saying, and just being upfront with who I was. But when people did see me, they saw me as, quote unquote, the Catholic girl who loved Jesus. But that's all they could really see. They didn't really get to know me as a person as well. And for myself, it made me feel very boxed. Like, it was hard because in doing that, I had to... Well, I didn't have to. I chose to pretty much rebel against what had been installed in me, like, since childhood, because I wanted to fit in. I wanted to be liked. I wanted to be popular. I wanted what every teenager wants. And there are just certain things that you have to do in order to get that in high school. And I decided to do it.
And it got into the drugs and the drinking and all that stuff. What was it like out there in a world of the teenage world of drinking and drugs and that whole world?
Well, it was interesting when I first got into it because I was like, is this all there is? Like, I remember one of the first, the first couple parties I went to, I was like, wow, so is this what we do? And that's what we did. We drank, we got drunk, we smoked weed, and that's just what you did, and that was all there was to it. It was empty, but then again, you had that satisfaction of being accepted, of people looking to be like, oh yeah, you're cool. But it wasn't truth.
And we just wonder how the Lord was looking at us at that moment, eh?
Yeah. Be like, sorry, God. But yeah, it was hard.
And being a pretty teenager was really important in that crowd, eh?
That was a really huge deal for me. For myself, I took a turn in the worst. I became anorexic in that time when I was in high school. For about a year and a half, I had lost quite a bit of weight, actually. It wasn't as serious as I needed to be hospitalized, but people noticed it and people tried to confront me on it. And basically, I starved myself for a while, it just in order to be pretty. I needed to be pretty.
And what were your parents doing this whole time?
Praying. I knew they were praying for me. I got really, really good at hiding it. It was actually rather simple for me to hide it, because in that time I was going through, you know, as my parents saw as like a normal kind of teenage rebellion, so, but they saw that there was something definitely wrong, and I saw them, my parents take me aside sometimes and be like, Hannah, we love you, and like, there's nothing that you need to do, you know, like, we love you, you are beautiful. And when I was a kid, they'd always used to tell me that I was a princess and that Jesus lived in my heart, and just bringing me back to those things in that hard time. And that was actually one of the key things in being able to be better again, to be cured, was to know that my parents were there the entire time, always bringing me back to Christ in their own way.
And so maybe that's your advice to parents who have a teenager who is rebelling.
Pray. Definitely. Power of prayer, I've just realized it in my own life, is so incredible. And definitely just accept them, like, know that they're struggling, and accept them for where they're at. Like, definitely, I wouldn't say, like, try to cure them yourselves, because you won't be able to do it. But pray.
And what happened to turn you back to Christ?
I actually got involved with some people who are called netters. Those are people who are on NET, which is National Evangelization Teams of Canada. And they were incredible people. They were just really accepting of everyone around them, really loving. They really accepted themselves too, and that stood out to me.
And they brought you back into a personal relationship with Christ. Did you find on the other side of that, I guess when we grow up in a family that's Catholic, we can sort of go through the motions or whatever, and we really have to take Jesus on, that personal relationship for ourselves. Is that what happened when you began to associate with the netters?
Definitely. What I saw was them, that the, like, in their own lives, of course, everyone has their own struggles. And it wasn't something that they were struggling with themselves. They brought it to Christ in their own lives. And that was a huge encouragement to me. And like, no matter what I was going through, I could bring what I had to Christ. People won't be able to make it better, but Christ journeying with you, Christ being there for you, that's what's going to make the difference.
Hannah Barrett, thank you so much for speaking with us here at Bridging the Gap. And I pray that your ministry continues to grow and you're able to touch more and more youth. I hear that you spoke to thousands and thousands of youth while you're over in Ireland. And I pray that that ministry will continue as you continue this journey with the Lord.
Thank you very much. Had a great time.
I have with me here Andy Horner, and Andy's from Minneapolis, St. Paul. And how old are you, Andy?
I'm 19 years old.
19 years old. You folks, can you imagine that? 19 years old, I'm loving the Lord. I think about what I was doing when I was 19 years old. I wasn't exactly loving on the Lord. Andy, you've just gotten back from Ireland. You've been on tour. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, Ireland's been great. It totally blew my mind. I knew I was signing up to be a missionary. I knew I was signing up to go to Ireland. And it was, you know, that whole, there's an appeal to Ireland. There's a catch. I was so excited to go there. And when I got there, it was harder than I thought it was going to be. The missionary work was, in fact, very difficult. It was very challenging for my own faith. It brought up a lot of questions of my own and made me really fight for my faith. And now it's something that I take as my own. I fought for it, and now I love it. I love it more because, I don't know, I believe it's more strongly because I've had to defend it in some interesting circumstances. So I love Ireland. It'll be one of the greatest memories of my life so far. Of my 19 years, probably the greatest memory of my life. And we'll see what the Lord does from here on out from what he taught me from Ireland.
Tell me about some of those challenges to your faith that people were putting you up against.
Well, there was a lot of challenges. For one, obviously we butt up a lot against the Da Vinci Code. Like over there, that's a huge best-selling book, just like everywhere else in the world. And there's a lot of questions, and I had to deal with that. I had to try to separate some of the fact from fiction and go with that. And over there, there's a lot of, since the faith is so old over there, Catholicism has been there forever. Whereas where I'm from in the States and Canada, it's not so much. And they kind of have an idea of, well, I've been Catholic, my great-great-grandparents were Catholic, and so were their great-great-grandparents, so I know what Catholicism is. And not only that, but Ireland right now is having the biggest economic boom they've ever had. In the last 10 years, they've made more money than they ever have, and some people are losing sight of God in that they don't think they need him as much because they have this great amount of money.
You know, it's amazing. We can be Catholic our whole lives and have our great grandfathers and just sort of go through the motions. But what the Church really teaches is that we need to get personal with Christ. In section 1428 to 1430 of the Catechism, we're told that we need to have a second conversion, to have a conversion of heart for Christ. That's really what NED is trying to do, right? NED is a Catholic organization that's going into amongst our Catholic friends and showing them, man, we love that you love the Church and everything, but now we need to get real with Christ.
Yeah, like definitely. Our mission statement is challenging young Catholics to love Christ and embrace the life of the Church in that order. Like, love Christ. That's huge. That is our foundation. That's all we got. And oh man, bringing that to the youth. Like, the Church is great. They see the Church, and that's wonderful. It is such a stone, but for them to know that everything revolves around Christ and to look to him for everything. You can see it in their faces, that hunger for something great, that hunger for truth. And to tell them that it is alive, to tell them that Christ is still there for them and that they don't need to look for what society's telling them they should do, but that Jesus Christ is the truth. It's a beautiful thing. It's why this is my second year doing ministry, and I've loved it. I've loved it.
Now, you had quite a disappointment in your own life. You gave your testimony a little earlier, and you talked about the story of the good luck, bad luck, only God knows. And in your own life, you had a bad luck story, it appears, and turned out to be perhaps even good luck, maybe not even luck. tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, what happened is I've played soccer since I was a little kid, since I was 4 years old, and I was always pretty talented at it. I was captain of my team for many years, and in high school I played very well, and I was scouted, and there was a chance of me getting scholarships to university so I wouldn't have to pay for college. I could go on my soccer abilities, and that's all I could ever dream for. That's all I could ever hope for. And then after my senior year, February of my senior year, my knee blew up to about twice the size that it should be, and I went to the doctor, and he said, you have Lyme's disease, and you've had it for 11 months, and what this is it causes a joint in your body to be destroyed pretty much, just really inflamed and hurt, and then it will, after that, it'll cause you to go blind and then lose mental comprehension and then die. And I was obviously very upset in the beginning, and I knew my soccer career was pretty much at an end. You know, there wasn't anything really clinically wrong with my knee besides the fact that it was huge and inflamed and hurt. And but fortunately, you know, nothing happened. I didn't go blind, and all is well.
How did that happen? Why did you not get all the sort of prognosis that they given to you? What happened? Did you guys pray or something?
No, what happened with that pretty much is, if I hadn't caught it, is what happened. If I would have waited longer and not had it get caught and not had the perfect timing of it, I would have lost more. And the doctors were telling me if I was a younger man or if I were older and my immune system were weaker, I would have been blind by now, because I did have it for a good long time. But fortunately, like, God's timing is perfect, and God's timing was just that what needed to happen happened. And it was hard at the time, but my instinct thought obviously was, man, this is no good. I can't believe this happened. My soccer career after 14 years is gone. And my second thought was, all right, God, if there's something in this for me, this is not the end of the story. There has to be something more than this. And I began to pray about it and really see what God was calling me to. And I took the year off of school and I was asked to go and give talks to students about my life, about my testimony, and about different aspects of my life, and I did that. And a woman asked me if I would travel around the U.S. with Net Ministries of Canada, if I would apply, and I did, and wound up traveling with Net in the States. And then when I was finished up with the States, they asked if I would travel in Ireland, and I said, of course, you know, might as well. So I came to Ireland, and now I'm here. So God has brought me to this place in my life through something that seemed so horrible, but it clearly was a gift.
And here we are in Quebec City at the Congrès Eucharistique International in Quebec City. And it's really preparation for 2008, where there's going to be about 250,000 people in this region, and Pope Benedict on top of that. What do you, you've obviously had a relation, an encounter with Christ. You, something that changed your life. Could you tell us a little bit about that? Perhaps what it was like before that, what happened, and what changed after that?
Yeah, I know that when I was growing up, I was the kind of guy that popularity was important to me. My friends were important to me. God wasn't so much. I grew up Catholic, but it was kind of like, well, if you have a soccer game on Sunday, don't worry about going to Mass. And, you know, it was pretty a lazy Catholic, as I would put it my way. But, and I lived that way. And I got into, you know, a lot of high schoolers do, you know, I got into drinking and eventually got into drugs, and life like that started to get pretty hard. And through all that time, my friends were telling me, man, you got the perfect life right now, because I was popular. I got good grades. I had a girlfriend. I was captain of the soccer team. I had pretty much everything you could ask for in high school. And, but inside I was like, wow, this feels empty. This doesn't feel right. And a friend of mine just randomly came up to me and he asked me, so how is your prayer life going? I was like, my prayer life? I don't really need a prayer life. And he's like, you know, there might be more to life if you look to the cross. So I thought about that and I prayed. And my prayer wasn't anything big. My prayer was just simply, God, is there more for me than this? God, is this all I'm meant to be? And I prayed that honestly with my heart. And nothing, you know, nothing huge happened to me. But I felt a certain peace enter my heart that had not ever been there before. And I knew that there could be something more. Life didn't have to be in fear of getting caught for anything, or life. I didn't have to live like that. I could have a peace and a joy that I'd never experienced. And I started to try to do that. I started to mold my life. And it was hard because my friends, they didn't understand. They just wanted me to be the same old guy. And still at times, you know, 3-4 years down the road, they still don't get it. And it's hard. But the joy and the companionship of Christ in my life is worth it, is worth all of that. Now, I haven't, you know, I still play soccer. Like I said, I'm gonna try to play this fall for Steubenville in Ohio. And I still have a lot of friends. And my life hasn't become boring, or it hasn't become empty because I'm Catholic. It's become quite the opposite. A lot of people have asked me, you know, can you do anything fun anymore? Do you not do anything fun anymore? And the answer is yes, I do fun things. Like, I have a good time. I'm Catholic, and I'm proud to be, and I have fun being a Catholic, and I have fun living my life with Christ and living my life as a single Catholic male.
Andy, what do you have to say to parents who have a kid who's going through, you know, maybe they're a teenager, and they're going through the whole sort of drug drinking thing? They might be a Christian family. The child might have gone to church a lot when they were younger. What do you have to say to those parents?
That's hard. Clearly pray. Like, clearly pray. That's all you can really do in that. Now, for myself, any advice I could give is hard because, like, I don't have any kids as it is. From a kid growing up in that perspective, pray and be there. If your child knows that you're there for them, like, if they know that you know that they're drinking, if they know that you know that they're doing drugs, but you're there supporting them and loving them with all you got, still showing them love and showing that you don't approve of what they're doing, but that you love them regardless, it'll make them think twice about the next time they do something. It'll make them think, is this really worth it? Because in the end, the drinking and the drugs coming from a young guy, it wasn't worth it. When I saw the love from my family and from my friends and ultimately from God, it wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth that. And so if you show your kids that kind of love, they have a high chance of turning back around, I think. It's all about that love, the family love.
What about the confrontation thing? Do you think that, like, what would you have, or did your parents confront you, or what would you have done if they had have confronted you, like saying, you know, we know what's going on, and or tried to punish you, or that kind of stuff?
Well, my parents never did confront me. I'm pretty sure they knew what I was doing, but they never did confront me. And I'm not like, I don't know how it would have changed. If they had confronted me at the time, I don't know if it would have really caused me to change my ways, if it would have caused me to rebel harder, to be like, well, you notice it. I don't care that you notice it. This is what I'm doing with my life. Love is the answer. Like, it really is in that case. It's hard to say, would this work? Because it's obviously with different youth. Or I can definitely say the one big thing that will work is love. And if you confront somebody, confront them in love. Even, man, if you could get, if it's not even the parents confronting, an older brother confronting, a younger brother confronting, something like that inside the family or friends, confrontation can be a powerful thing. But if there's no love in there, that's the hardest part. That is the hardest part.
Andy Horner, thanks so much for joining us here on Bridging the Gap. I pray that your ministry will continue to grow. I pray that you'll be able to continue to be a light for the youth. You're going back to the United States next year and going to be at Steubenville. And Steubenville is a really hopping campus where there are radical Catholics in the Holy Spirit and just thousands of youth just with their hands in the air and just praying. Praising God. It's an amazing, the music is fantastic there, and it's a wonderful environment there. I'm sure that you're going to get along great over there. Thanks for joining us on Bridging the Gap, and I pray that you'll continue to be strong in the faith.
Thanks, Devin. Thanks for bringing your ministry onto the airwaves where we need it. Thank you very much.
With me here, two youth ministers from the Archdiocese of Pembroke, Mary Helen Mose and Katie McGrath. We're at the 2006 Youth Conference in Quebec City, getting in preparation for the Eucharistic Conference that's going to happen in 2008. What are you seeing with the Catholic Church in the Peterborough area? Do you feel that Pope John Paul II's call to a new springtime of the Spirit is actually happening?
Pope John Paul, for the young people, I mean, he was it, and he really called them to action and called them to take roles in the church. And it's really starting to happen. It's starting to come back around, and there's so much spirit. And being here at this conference this weekend, you really witness that, and it just fills you with hope.
Yeah, in 2008, there's going to be about 250,000 people are going to descend upon this city, and they are just going to take back the native Christianity of the province, and we're really looking forward to seeing it. Youth today, we're really in an interesting crossroads with the youth, aren't we? Parents don't know what to do. You know, the kids are starting sex at 10 years old, 11 years old. There's tons of drugs out there, crystal meth, and the whole deal with ecstasy and all that stuff. What are we going to do to get them back?
I think the thing that you do is you're a witness, and just love is one of the things that you can do. I think there's a spiritual hunger among youth right now, and they're filling that up in different ways. They're filling it up, if they don't have that, through drugs and alcohol. We don't have community like we used to have communities, and so they're turning to bad things, and they're not witnessing what the good that comes out of the church. Sometimes they don't understand what's there for them, and they're afraid of it. And one of my favorite things is be not afraid. And I think when we show them our spirituality and our faith and all of the joy that we have, that is going to attract them. And when we just live a good life and a Christian life, then that's how we bring them in, and just love them. That's the best that we can do.
I think they're all searching for more right now, and it's that more that's unattainable. And like, I mean, everybody is. Otherwise, Oprah and Dr. Phil would not be making so much money right now. Like, everybody's searching for more. And the crazy thing is, Catholic Church has it. We have the sacraments. We have everything going for us. We're just marketing it so terribly. A lot of our parishes look like seniors clubs at this point, and the youth aren't finding a place in that, but it's there. They just, you know, maybe they haven't been asked to participate. Maybe they, they've just gone so long. The people that are leading our parishes have gone so long doing it one way that they almost closed the door to anything new. We don't know what exactly it is, but we know that the youth are looking for this. I think one of the biggest things is that we totally admit and know that nobody is perfect. Like, we're not your cradle Catholics with wearing plaid and saying, please, go back to wearing little doilies on your heads and you'll all be perfect Catholics. We're not there. We're like, wear your blue jeans. Just come. Like, just come. Come as you are and worship. Like, I mean, God's here for you. He's waiting for that relationship. And that's what we're trying to offer. We're not pushing. We're not trying to be more than we are. We're just saying, this is what it is. And just surprising results. Every time we've done an event, we're always surprised by the numbers. And every time we try too hard and it starts looking like adults dictating that this is what kids, you know, should know about the Catholic Church, I'll tell you, that event's going to die. And so we look at, what do the youth want? What are they looking for? What is that more that we could provide? And we try and fill the gap in. And it's been really working beautifully. It's been a wonderful thing. World Youth Day and this event, the Eucharistic Conference, are both wonderful models of giving people that more. Individually, we are all benefiting, but we're in a group. We're in a mass group, so we can all turn to each other and go, oh my gosh, have you ever been this happy in your life? Like, it's really awesome that we all have the same experiences. It's just a great, great thing.
It really is. And I think the thing with the church, too, is what is relevant to them today. Christ has always been relevant. He's never changed. He's as relevant today as he was, you know, 2,000 years ago when the Catholic Church Christian started. And to find a way to unite the youth, to find the way to bring them together, is something that we have to do. And I think the church has to take responsibility for plant a seed inside the church so that it's growing with the group, so that when you grow together, the church isn't going to die. It's going to thrive, and it's going to be amazing.
Well, this weekend was certainly a witness of that. We had 650 youth, and they had to turn away a couple of hundred youth also. Just an incredible amount of interest here in Quebec City.
There's so much spirit here and so much joy, and we're going to take that back to Peterborough, and we're going to build on it. And this is what has to happen. When the youth see the joy and how happy people are, it's contagious, and it's going to be like the flu. It's just going to get passed on from one person to the next. Seriously, it's going to be amazing, and that is contagious joy. When people see you happy for Christ and God, and you have to be set on fire for that, I think, in your heart. We want to thank Father Norbert. He's back at home with Peterborough. He is the most amazing. He's the head of leading this whole youth movement in Peterborough, and really, he's just on fire for God. And that's where we get our joy from, is from him, because he's got so much of it, and he's awesome with youth, and we're lucky and fortunate to have him. And everybody who didn't come to the Eucharistic Congress, we are bringing the joy home.
Mary Helen Mose and Katie McGrath, thanks so much for joining us here on Bridging the Gap. Section 1426 to 1430 of the Catechism, we are invited to have a second conversion, to have a personal encounter with Christ. It is a part of our Catholic faith. My prayer is that for those of you who may not have had that experience, that you will invite Christ to be the Lord of your life. If you'd like to get in contact with Bridging the Gap or order a copy of this show on CD, you can find us online at CatholicBridge.com. That's www.CatholicBridge.com. We'd love to hear from you. Until then, may God richly bless you and your family.
On his new CD, David MacDonald shares about the struggle and sin that was in his life before he met Jesus.
Break me, Lord, break.
It's about repentance and God's healing and forgiveness.
The angels in heaven to the man in depression. Your love.
By far the worst mistake I've ever made in my life was abortion. I pray for anyone who's thinking about it. I knew I had to call this CD Life is the Only Choice, because I chose life when I chose Jesus. I chose life when I decided to stand up and talk to other men about my experience with abortion. And I chose life when I began to share the spiritual healing I've received from Jesus Christ.
Life is the Only Choice. Available at Salem Storehouse. David's full testimony is online at www.davidmacd.com. That's www.davidmacd.com.